Hi, this is Dee Wallace. You know me from E.T. the Extraterrestrial, and you're seeing me on Grimm right now on NBC. And I'm here with Rabbi Saul Solomon on Days Gone By on UNC Radio.
Shalom! Shalom! Hello, is Dee Wallace there, please?
Hi, Rabbi. I'm here, baby.
Oh, baby. Ooh. Now, Dave, who hosts this radio program, warned me that you would be a sweet talker. I will be on my guard. In fact, my wife is standing nearby with a kitchen knife, so I'm going to be on extra guard. But, ladies and gentlemen, I am so thrilled and excited to be talking to a movie star. Ooh, also a television star, a lovely lady, a nice person. Her name is Dee Wallace. You saw her, of course, in the movie E.T. She was also known as something of a screen queen in horror movies such as Cujo and The Howling and The Frighteners and Critters. And I don't know, did you ever do a horror film like I've had, like Hemorrhoids? That's my worst horror that I've ever had. No, I guess not.
No, I've never had a hemorrhoid in my life because I'm not full of shit.
Ba-dum-bum! This is going to be quite an interview, ladies and gentlemen. Dee Wallace in the neighborhood with us. She's going to be on TV's Grimm, but right now she's in the neighborhood with Dave's Gone By. Welcome, Dee!
Thank you, Rabbi. Oh, my God, I don't think I've ever talked with anybody as much energy as I have, but I've met my match, Rabbi.
You certainly, it's God speaking through me, usually through my colon, but basically through me. So, Dee, my dear, first of all, was that your birth certificate name? What's your actual name?
Deanna Bowers.
Deanna Bowers. Now, where did the Wallace come from?
The Wallace came from my first marriage.
Oh, well, there you go. And then Stone would have been from the second marriage, because
yes.
Dee Wallace Stone for a while. Were any of either of your husbands Jewish?
No, but actually my boyfriend right now is Jewish.
Finally you make
and
the right decision.
I've got to tell you, one of the best lovers I've ever had. Does that run in the Jewish male world here?
Wow, that's almost too much information, except I'm a complete perverted voyeur. So what makes him the best lover that you have ever had?
Well, let's see. I didn't think it was...
Didn't think we'd be going there either.
Well, he's incredibly caring.
This is good.
He's very attentive. He gets just pure joy out of making me happy.
Wow.
In and out of bed. And he's just an awesome lover.
Because if he is Jewish, we know we're not talking about his size. So he's got to compensate in other ways. This is important.
Well, this is not the case with my man. I don't know what to tell you. Why? Do Jewish guys usually not have big dongs?
That's sort of the lead. We're somewhere between the Chinese and the blacks, but much, much closer to the Chinese, which is why we eat their food on Christmas all the time.
I see.
There you go. Well, how did you meet this hot, hung lover stud of yours?
How can you meet him?
No, how did you meet your beau?
You know how we met? We met on an internet dating site.
You're a kid. Is there a
way? Way too much information on this.
No, it's fine. I mean, what? Is there a dating site for celebrities or something like that?
No, actually, I didn't say I was a celebrity. I used my maiden name, and, you know, you wouldn't believe it from this interview, but I'm also a healer.
Oh, my goodness.
And do a lot of healing work like you. I guess they call me the irreverent healer. What do they call you?
You don't want to know what they call me. Usually it's four-letter words for the most part. And that's when God talks to me. He even calls me an a-hole. And I don't get it. I try. But let me ask, when you say healing, is it only mental, spiritual, or do you actually physically touch people and heal them in that evangelist way that I don't believe in?
Yeah, I don't believe in it either. And let me also add, though, that I do believe that all illness of any kind, mental, physical, spiritual, chemical, is caused first by a breakdown in your energy, in your anger patterns, in your unforgiveness patterns, in your lack of self-love patterns. And if you don't address that energetically, then pretty soon your body goes, okay, well, we can't get your attention any other way, so we'll get sick. So you'll look at it from, you know, there's nothing more dramatic than an illness to make you step back and go, what the hell is this about, you know?
Well, first you say, why me? And then you start thinking, well, why me? And
yeah.
Then it's how I get over being me, as it were.
Or move into more of who I really am. And I think that's the, you know, I think the bottom line of all of it is loving yourself. And we're just not.
Oh, I do that every morning in the shower. No, but seriously.
Boy, you know, I want to meet your wife.
No, you don't.
I want to meet your wife just to bless her.
Do you know we have, God willing, 21 and a half beautiful children? Well, 15 are beautiful, the rest inbreeding. But no, we actually, she's a very, you know, I do my part in the sack, let's just say.
You have 15 kids?
Well, no, 21 and a half kids, but some of them are not as nice as the others.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
You have 21 biological children.
And a half. You keep forgetting the half.
So she's pregnant.
Exactly. And you know, also one of the kids, hopefully her head will eventually take its normal shape. We're waiting. We're just waiting for that. Anywho.
Okay, seriously. I don't know whether, if you have 21 kids, you need to stop. You need to stop or use a condom or get it snipped, all right?
Wait, well, no, snipped I had it. Snipped was done when I was 8 days old. This has been done.
Yeah, well, that snip doesn't count.
Now, how did you before, I guess we're getting into this slightly more serious stuff, although still full of laughs, but this healing thing came about when you had to heal yourself after a tragedy. I'm correct?
After many tragedies, yes.
Many?
The tragedy that broke the camel's back, as it were, was the death of my husband when I was shooting the Frighteners.
Right.
And I kind of fell to my knees and wailing at God, saying, I want a way we can heal ourselves. And within, you know, seconds, I heard what I lovingly call the voice.
No, wait. Do you sound like me?
Not in the least yet. Yeah.
Do you sound like Gilbert Gottfried, or who else would he sound like?
Sometimes it is pretty funny, but, you know, it said, use the light within you to heal yourself.
And had you, before that moment, had you ever done any kind of spiritual work, you know, growth stuff, Esalen,
sure.
Any of that stuff?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, you had? Okay.
And I was raised a Methodist. I was raised in as religious a household as a Methodist can get. We're not one of the, you know, stricter Christian religions.
Oh. Okay.
And my older brother, this kind of sums me up and my family. Okay, Rabbi, my older brother worked his way through seminary shooting pictures for Playboy.
My life would have been so much better if I could have worked my way through through seminary the same way.
Saying, that's kind of who we are, you know? We're really well-balanced people. then I studied some philosophies with my husband Christopher, a philosophy called conceptology, which was really the first precursor to all of this secret stuff and you're in charge of your energy and you create your life and all that. So I think I was born
right.
Spiritual.
Well, I know you were born.
Do you know what I mean when I say that? Some of us are just born spiritually with a heart that's open and full of love. And I think I was. I remember being three or four. We were very, very poor when I was younger. And it was a big deal if we got to go down to the local restaurant to have a hamburger, right?
Right, okay.
And I remember people coming up and asking my mom if they could give me a quarter to play the jukebox machine, and they'd come over to the table and go, God, she just is like this little angel, this little light, you know, we just wanted to say hello. And I just think, that's kind of what I brought to my work in the movies, even through all the horror films. It's funny, you know, a lot of people that interview me go, how can you justify doing all these horror films and being a healer at the same time? And I say, well, dude, I've been studying fear all my life, and sure. I can tell you that the biggest thing we're in fear of is ourselves, for sure. So that's just the my work in horror films and my healing work dovetail together. Grimm is a perfect example, my recurring role on Grimm right now.
And who do you play on Grimm?
I play Monroe's mother. And the next episode, February 28th, is the beginning of, you know, the next season after we're taking time off right now for the Olympics. And we come back February 28th. But if you watch the show Grimm, it's filled with messages about societal prejudices and genetic prejudices and inherited predispositions and anger and unforgiveness. It's all that
story of my life, let me tell you.
Yeah, well, it's where most of our lives.
But let me ask Dee
That's
Wallace.
Where disease is.
Go
ahead.
Did you audition for the role, or did it just come to you through your agent?
Not audition for Grimm because I had worked with both producers in a lovely little movie earlier in my career called Secret Admirer. And and I have worked for ABC, or NBC, excuse me, a lot, and I've worked for Universal a lot. I've had two of my series have been with Universal.
Which do you prefer?
So everybody knew me, everybody trusted me, everybody liked my work, and it's lovely when that stuff comes together and you just get an offer.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, tell me about it. Remember, I got an offer to do a sermon in Tennessee, and they even put me up in a garage. I was honored. I was moved.
Well, as long as you had a room above it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I wish they had moved the car while I was in there.
Why? That gave you a great platform to get up on. And
it did. I honked the horn when people fell asleep. I kept them awake during my speech. But let me ask, do you prefer, as an actress, as in working terms, movies or TV?
I would have to say movies.
Because?
Well, because you usually have more time. You usually have more freedom in films. But I have to say, if I could stay on Grimm forever, I would be in heaven. It reunited me with my belief in television and my love for television. But you know, like everything, Rabbi, we know it comes from the top. And
you mean from God?
Producers create an atmosphere where everyone's respected and very talented and great writing. And
But this now leads me to ask, since you're intimating something behind there, what was your worst television experience? And if you're reticent to name names, you can at least tell the story and then change the names.
Well, yeah, it would not be politically... It would be suicide for me as an actress to actually tell you what... But it was a cable show, and we had this very, very long, 5-minute almost walk and talk scene, a lot of different emotional peaks and valleys and dolly shots. It was really very involved. And we did it, and we literally got it in one
take.
And I had inverted 4 or 5 words. And they didn't like that, so they decided we needed to do it over again. And, of course, then the airplanes came, and then the camera bobbles, and the sound screws up, and it was like 27 takes later, and I think they actually ended up using the first one anyway. But that's what I mean. You know, that wouldn't happen on a film.
Oh, I see what you mean. Well, but that wasn't a mean story. That was just one of the challenges of doing TV. It wasn't about bad personalities or incompetence. You probably would have had to do two takes anyway just for coverage. So, that wasn't such a bad story.
Well, you asked me why I like to do films more, and that's one of the most prevalent reasons is that you have a lot more freedom to make the dialogue your own.
Now, speaking of movies, we are talking with Dee Wallace, who I guess most people might remember first off from E.T. Do you remember how you got that role?
I do, actually. I went in to audition for a previous film called Used Cars that Steven did. Fortunately, I did not get Used Cars, but he liked my quality and everything for the mom and E.T., and so when E.T. came along, I got a call and was offered that part.
And while you were filming it, did you realize that it would become special, iconic, et cetera, and so forth?
You know, I knew that it was special. I knew the script was special, absolutely. But anybody in this business will tell you, well, I'll give you, I did 10 with Blake Edwards.
Right.
And I said, oh, Mr. Edwards, this is going to be such a hit. And he looked at me and smiled and said, honey, if we knew what made a hit, we'd have a lot more of them. I mean,
yeah.
So many things have to come together. The timing, whether the audience takes to it, the marketing of the film, just everything. I mean, The Frighteners is a brilliant film. It was supposed to come out at Halloween. If it had come out at Halloween, it would have been a huge hit. But another movie dropped out, and Universal decided to release it along with the big other blockbusters.
And it kind of got lost in the shuffle there.
Yeah, and it got buried. So many things have to come together to make a hit.
As long as we're mentioning some of these films and some of these people, let's talk about your memories of working with people, what you might have learned from them, or any funny anecdotes, or I'll just throw out some names. So, you were on this movie with Blake Edwards. What was his directing style?
Oh my God, I adored Blake. I feel like I started at the top, and sort of, yeah.
I wouldn't go there, because there's only one way to go from there.
Blake was old Hollywood. He didn't worry about money
at
all. He took care of everybody. I mean, I had a beautiful suite in Las Hadas, Mexico, and I was definitely one of the minor characters in the movie. Respected everybody, but he played hardball. He knew exactly what he wanted, and you better be professional enough to come through. And, I remember there was an actor on the set that came on the set and didn't know their lines. And he ripped him one,
oh.
Rabbi. He really did. He said, you don't ever come on this set and not be prepared. And I remember our sound guy came up to me, and he was asking me if I could speak up more. And Blake walked by, and he stopped and went, what are you talking to my actress about?
Hmm.
And the guy kind of froze and said, well, I was just asking her to speak up, Mr. Edwards. He said, I don't pay you to talk to my actors and change their performance. I pay you to get whatever they say at the level they say it. So he was... But he was like, I was a new kid from Kansas, and he just took me under his wing. And when I finished 10, he actually sent me to his agents and said, this is one of the best actresses I've ever worked with. I think you should take a look at her. They actually told me, ultimately, come back when you're making $500,000 a year. And I thought, well, dudes, I won't need you then. I need you to help me make $500,000 a year. So, but I adored working with Blake, and he was one of the first that worked with the monitors. And so he would be on the sound stage next to us that was opened up and watching the monitor. And when you yelled cut, nobody said a word until Blake said, we're going to, you know. And we had to rebuild the whole bathroom set because he wanted to pick me up when I go into the kitchen. He wanted to pick me up in there, I mean, the bathroom.
Right.
And so we did it in one take, and everybody's silent, and Blake says, cut, and he goes, okay, we got it. And I hear the production manager running over, Mr. Edwards, you know, we spent however many thousands of dollars rebuilding this set, you know, don't you think we should get another one or some more coverage? And Blake looked at him and he said, look, I know what I want, I know what I need, I saw that I got it, we're moving on. And that's my kind of guy, you know, to do it 8 or 10 or 12 times just in case just gets really boring to the actor. And unless you're learning your lines while you're doing it,
right?
You know, which is not the case with me. So,
can I ask also, so before we leave the movie 10, which was a big comedy of its time, any memories of Dudley Moore?
Oh my, yes, big heart memories, Rabbi. Just he was like a brother to me. We had such a good time. We danced on many tabletops in Mexico.
Okay.
And he was sweet and gentle and giving and just a beautiful person. Beautiful person.
Oh, that's great to know. And so it's always nice. People always think that you're digging for dirt and you want to hear the bad stories, but it's always, you also want to hear the great stories when people are delightful and fun and sweet and professional. You know, I like hearing that.
And Julie, too. Julie was just so supportive. I'll tell you, one of the people that I worked with in my career that I have always appreciated from my heart is Angie Dickinson. I did my first guest star role on Police Woman.
Oh, my goodness.
And she was so supportive and so giving. The first big close-up I had was this big scene, and we finished, and the director went, oh, that was great, we're moving on. And I said, excuse me, could I have one more? I think I can do it better. And he said, no, you don't. You know, we're moving on. We got it. And Angie looked at him and said, look, she only got one take. She thinks she can do it better. Give her another take. And so he did, because she was the star. And he yelled cut, and he looked at me, and he went, you're right, it was better.
Nice.
But, you know, there's not many stars that will come forward for the guest star like that. I've always admired her and appreciated her, and just, you know, she supported the people that were on her set. And I've really always tried to remember that, because, you know, when you walk on as a guest star,
yeah,
everybody's a family, and you're coming in as the stranger to sit down to dinner, kind of, you know, and it can be awkward. You can feel.
I was wondering about that, because you came into the TV show, the American version of The Office, well into the run, and I'm curious how that felt, what it was like trying to fit into the machinery of a well-oiled machine.
Well, The Office wasn't as easy to fit into as many of the guest stars that I've done, primarily because I had a totally incorrect concept of how the show was actually done. I actually thought, because I had just done a series where we got to improv almost everything, and I thought The Office was all improv. Well, it's not at all. It's all scripted. And they really don't want you to go away from the script very much. They want everything just kind of deadpan. To tell you the truth, I felt like I wasn't doing anything. So, yeah, you know, that's why, if I had my preferences, I would choose grim and the horror sci-fi genre over these little comedies, because I feel more satisfied as an actress.
Well, may I ask what series it was that you were in where you were doing the improv and you were having that more leeway? Which show was that?
Oh, my God. I can't remember the name of it.
Oh, I'm just curious. It wasn't the
name. I should remember the name of it because it was my favorite series that I've ever done other than Together We Stand. But I can't pull it up right now.
We'll have to IMDb it.
There's too many things, you know, in the last 6 years, so...
Well, yeah, that's an amazing thing is that you have been able to work so steadily. I mean, you went from being sort of that ingenue to the mom to the... And you're working at a career when a lot of actresses during a certain age period don't get a lot of work. So to what do you attribute that?
I attribute that to me not having the belief that I'm going to stop working when I get a certain age. And it's the name of it was Sons and Daughters, and it was a brilliant show.
Sons and Daughters, okay.
But, yeah, I really, my healing work is really based on, you know, the I Am statement that as you believe, it's delivered to you, baby. So anything you say after I Am is literally a definition of who you are in this world. So if I say, you know, I'm a 65-year-old woman and women my age have a really tough time in my business, then I will create that. But I don't have that belief. I know that I'm the creator of my life and everything in it. And so if I want to keep working or making money or having a successful healing practice, if I want to do any of that, I have to be in harmony within myself about it.
Well, can I ask, when you heal other people, and what are some, again, you're not going to name names, but what are success stories that you had with people who were emotionally crippled and that you were able to pull out of their shells, as it were?
Oh, my gosh. Hundreds, thousands.
Good Lord.
I have a gentleman who had full-blown AIDS. They didn't know if he was going to make it through the end of this year that he started working with me. They've declared him AIDS-free. His count is so high now. He has HIV, but he doesn't have AIDS.
Now, wait, well, okay, now hold on. That's a physical thing. We're not talking, now we're physically talking.
AIDS is
a disease.
So physical and mental and emotional all dovetail together. If you're not happy and you're judging yourself and you do not accept who you are, you will turn against yourself physically. You will start doing drugs and turn against yourself chemically. You will...
Well, if you get stuck in the tuchus, you can also get AIDS. But the thing is, you know, people, there were happy people who got AIDS and died from it. I don't care how happy you are. That's your body.
Well, we disagree there. Because I don't think that your body takes on, and I could be wrong, but my belief system and what I know now from the information that I get is, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Let's just take the flu epidemic right now.
Okay.
Okay. Flu is around 24/7. It's always there. Always.
Okay.
So it must be more about the immune system and a breaking down of the immune system that allows that to take over, which means there is an emotional, spiritual, thought process component that has to dovetail into that. Otherwise, your immune system stays strong.
Well, you can brace yourself. You can put up barriers by sleeping enough, having a proper diet and vitamins, whatever, but you can still shake the wrong person's hand.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all.
Do you ever get a common cold? Do you ever get a common cold?
Well, sure.
Well, how do you explain that? Aren't you mentally preparing yourself against all colds?
Well, no, because then I would be focused on colds, and if you're whatever you're focused on, you're going to create, which is why I think we have epidemics of flu now, because they start out, oh, the flu season's coming, everybody get ready.
Okay.
And they start planting that fear right there. And then it's, wow, the flu season's really started, more fear, let's keep our focus on the flu. And then, oh, it's just horrible, this year's flu season, we hear this every year, this year's flu season is going to be really bad.
That's right.
And
that's
this
true.
Year's flu season is the worst ever, and now we have 4 deaths, and now we have 10 deaths, and now we have 50 deaths, and now we have 100 deaths. They literally hypnotize us to keep our focus on the fear of the flu. And what does that do? It attracts it right to you. Science will tell you whatever you focus on expands in your creation process.
Well, let's think. There's a rabbi who actually wrote the book, When Bad Things Happen to Good People. Have bad things happen to you since the, you know, the problem, the sadness in your childhood with your dad, with the alcoholism,
sure.
And then and since losing your husband?
Sure.
So do you feel like every bad thing you unconsciously or semi-consciously brought upon yourself?
No, but I think what I do with what we call those bad things, I don't call them bad things, you see. I call them experiences. Right now, I just got the information that my white shepherd is riddled with cancer and I probably have 3 months with her.
Okay.
I want to know why. I don't go, oh, poor me, I'm such a victim, this shouldn't happen. I want to know why. I want the answers to, I know animals have consciousness, but they don't hold, as far as I understand, they don't hold anger and unforgiveness like we do. So why?
Why do bad things happen to good dogs?
What is it that creates the cancer? I want that information. I want to know that information. Because I don't think that it just happens, Rabbi. And there's nothing that we do or don't do in our creation process that has no effect on that. Everything is interconnected. Everything is interconnected.
Well, I mean, and it's funny that you strike that nerve, first of all, because the host of this radio program, Dave, he and his wife had a very sick dog this past year that had a tumor and all that stuff going on and has, thank God, lived and has really improved a whole heck of a lot. So 3 months isn't necessarily, hopefully, God willing, in your case, a death sentence for your dog. It might be, but it might not be.
I don't take anybody else's word for what my world can create. I had 6 specialists over 6 years telling me I would never have a child. It's not possible for you to have a child. Well, my beautiful daughter is 25 now.
Oh, you have a phone number? No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I'm kidding, Miriam Libby. I'm just joking.
She's engaged anyway, Rabbi. You're too late.
Jewish boy?
You know, if I had said, you know, I'm going to let you be my God, and I'm going to let you limit my possibilities, I wouldn't have my daughter. But I know that I'm the creator of me. The creator gave me that right. He gave me the free will to create myself.
Well, let me, not to be too gynecologically personal, but was it a case of you didn't think you were going to have a kid and boom, it happened? Or did you take the information saying, nope, no, I'm going to try all these different things? Were you proactive, shall we say, in assuming you could have a kid?
Of course. I mean, you know, God helps him who helps himself. Yeah, we all know that.
Okay.
And if you want to translate that into science, it's if you want to help yourself as the God of you, you've got to direct your own energy toward what you want. Not stop and go, well, it's impossible for me to do it. You've got to take that energy and go, well, I am going to find a way to do it.
Now, you went through finding this healing energy in yourself and going through all this stuff after you lost your second husband, but how did you get through, when you were much, much younger, the death of your father?
I got through because I was always a survivor. The death of my father by suicide was after I had watched him kill himself most of my life with alcohol.
Right.
So my message, and that's what I write about in my book, Bright Light, is no matter what happens to you in this world, you cannot call yourself a victim. You've got to remember that you are constantly the creator of your life. And whatever happens, you regroup and you create again. I mean, there was a time early in my career where my acting career totally fell away. I started teaching acting. I ended up with the largest acting studio in LA for 18 years, where my healing work was really refined. At some point in my life, it was clearly time for that to be over. I'm going to take this healing work out into the world, and I'm going to decide and get myself back in harmony with acting again. So I went back to class, and I looked at all the beliefs and judgments I had about my business, and I healed them. And I started loving what I did again, and then I started working again. You know, the answer's all within us.
You make it sound like such a natural progression, which I guess it ought to be, and it has been for you and a lot of the people that you have worked with and presumably healed, I assume.
I would say that the more you walk the talk and the more you stay conscious in your choice, then yes, it becomes second nature.
Are you a different actress now than you were in your 20s, 30s, 40s?
Yeah, I'm not as good.
Oh my God, why would you say this?
Well, I'm not as pure, and I'm working to get back to that.
Well, of course you're not pure. You're stripping that boyfriend of yours with a big schlong. What do you mean you're not as pure?
What does that have to do with my acting?
Oh, it was a purity term pure? Yeah, okay.
Well, I think it's just inherent in the business that after you're in the business for so long, if you're not really terribly careful, you start acting.
Oh.
And there's, you know, there's a little bit of me that watches my performances now and go, not so sure that wasn't acting. I need to be simpler. I just need to be there in the moment, you know. Most people that watch my performances don't agree.
But an actor, some actors can't even watch themselves. They don't want to see themselves on TV or on the screen. They cringe. They don't want to be at premieres. But you're okay watching yourself, but you can be very critical.
Yeah, I'm okay watching myself, but I can't really see what I've done until I watch it 3 or 4 times.
That's fair. And at least you can do sort of self-correction and go back. Because no one expects you to be an ingenue anymore. But at the same time,
I'm not talking about how I look or how young I come off or how I photograph. I'm not talking about any of that. I'm just talking about that purity of energy where you can risk doing absolutely nothing and fill the screen with everything.
Well, can I ask you a question? We've been talking movies and TV. You know, my friend Dave lived in New York most of his life. I've been to New York. Why have you not done much theater?
You know, I'm scared of it. That's the easiest. I did Annie Get Your Gun at Starlight Theater. I've done Hay Fever in Kansas City. I've done a couple of plays out here.
Ah.
But it's not fun for me because I have such fear of going up.
Now, wait a minute. You, of all people, should be able to psych...
Of all people, most of what I've done is television and film. And, you know, at the most, you have 3 pages of dialogue that you have to say at a time.
I know, but...
And I've always done films, so you can make it your own and, you know, say the lines close to what they're written, but personalize them them in the way that you would talk yourself.
Right.
You can't do that with frickin' Shakespeare.
All right, maybe not Shakespeare, but there are modern writers. But it's funny that you, of all people, seem to be standing in the way of yourself with fear, when it seems like exactly the kind of thing that you could psychologicalize yourself to get over and past and have a great experience with.
Well, and I've done it.
Well, that's true.
I've done it,
yeah.
But it's just not as fun for me.
Okay.
And I don't want to do anything where I don't have fun anymore.
That's fair. That's fair.
Now,
you earned.
Life's too long, Rabbi. Not have fun.
Now, well, I want to ask you, before we end our delightful conversation with Dee Wallace, who, by the way, is going back into the TV show Grimm. They've got new episodes starting on February 28th after all these stupid Olympics are over. Let me ask a couple more people that you have worked with over the years. Since you were a scream queen, what was it like working with Wes Craven?
Oh, my God. Wes, it was like working with a really brilliant college professor.
Mm.
And he is actually, or was, a college professor. Very quiet, very introverted, but again, knew exactly what he wanted. Rob Zombie, that I've done the remake of, well, it's the Rob make of Halloween.
The Rob make.
The Rob make, yeah.
Yes.
And Lords of Salem with. I adore Rob. He's just kind of your everyday guy, and at the same time, he's a total genius in art, in editing, in directing, but the most down-to-earth, available, beautiful guy. I love working with Rob. Everybody, you're not going to talk to an actor who has anything bad to say about Rob Zombie. We all love him. Because we all feel incredibly respected by him.
That's great.
You know? Joe Dante, yes. I just can't say enough about Joe. He's a creative genius. And half of what made the Howling was not only Joe's idea, but he also funded a lot of the stuff out of his own pocket, like the cartoons, which added so much. It was his idea to bring in all of the iconic older actors, right?
Yes.
From all those iconic films that they had done. And a lot of people don't know that everybody's name in The Howling is a throwback to some other werewolf movie over time. I mean, you know, the true fans know all this, but that's the brilliance of Joe. And, you know, I've just been incredibly fortunate to work with nice, talented directors, because there's assholes out there, too. They may be very talented, but I don't want to work with them.
And what about actors? Actors that you've worked with that you've had a lovely time with and can say really lovely things about?
Well, a lot of the kids.
Mm.
You know, I've worked with a lot of kids, and I've worked with my beautiful husband in four films.
Christopher Stone.
Yeah, Christopher Stone. And Dudley, of course, in 10, Julie. Loved Julie. She was so sweet and so giving. A lot of people over my TV career.
Right.
Also. But, you know, a lot of my films have been working with children. I mean, I couldn't tell you better actors than Henry Thomas and Danny Pintaro and Drew and Robert McNaughton. And, I mean, I love working with kids, because kids are truthful and they're in the moment. And they don't bring any baggage, you know, to the set.
True. True. And then do you find yourself becoming a surrogate mom, or are you still an actress friend?
I find myself a surrogate mom mostly when we're shooting. I'm really, I'm really alert and caring about the heavy emotional scenes. Because, you know, a psychologist will tell you that a child cannot distinguish between reality and fantasy until they're about 6 years old. So a lot of these kids that I worked with, I mean, Drew, for example.
Drew Barrymore,
you know,
yes.
Drew Barrymore, we were getting ready to do the scene where E.T.'s dying, right? And I go to her and I say, okay, Drew, now, you know, this is the scene we're going to do. And, you know, E.T.'s just pretending, right? He's not really sick. He's just acting like we are. She looks at me and says, I know, Dee. Do you think I'm stupid? So I pick her up. We get to the set. She takes one look at E.T. on the table with all the crap on him and the frost on him and everything, and she loses it.
Oh, boy.
Totally. You know, wailing and crying, E.T.'s dying, Dee's dying, we have to save him. You know, she went from, I know, to, I don't know at all. And, you know, Danny, the same way. I said, I'm concerned about you, you know, doing this scene where you have to go into the seizure, you know, and I'm concerned about how scary the dogs are going to be at the windows. And he said, oh, no, Dee, I had a seizure when I was little. Now, he was four, right? When I was little, I wanted to see me do it, and he went right into it. Didn't bother him at all. The dogs at the window? That was kind of another thing. And sometimes, you know, by the end of the scene, we'd both be screaming and crying. And I would just sit there after cut, and I would hold him and go, okay, so what did we just do here? We acted, didn't we? It felt kind of real, but we were really acting, weren't we? And we know that we weren't ever really in any danger, don't we? I know, but it got scary. You know, so yeah, I'm pretty vigilant about stuff like that when I work with kids.
And then do you help change his pants every other take? I know, I understand. Can I ask, Dee Wallace, before we let you go, you mentioned The Frighteners earlier as a film that came out at the wrong time and would be more known now and would have been a bigger hit. Are there one or two films that you did, or TV films, that the audience may not be that familiar with that you think deserve a screening, a Netflix rental, something that, you know, kind of passed under the radar that shouldn't?
Well, I love Secret Admirer. I think it's one of the most fun films.
Is that with Patrick Dempsey? No.
No, no, no. C. Thomas Howell.
Okay.
A lot of names are in it, and it's just a lovely takeoff on the letter and Shakespeare's play about the letter, and then the letter gets misconstrued and all that stuff. It's a teen kind
sure.
of a teen comedy, but it's a just a delightful little thing. And as far as some of my best work to this day, some of my best work I still think is Texas Cadet Murders. I have a 5-minute scene in that where I get the news that they found my daughter murdered.
Aye.
And I have to sit there and be interrogated, right? And I remember my agent sending me that, and he said, well, it's only two scenes, Dee, so I don't know if you're going to want to do it. I read that one scene, closed the script, called him and said, how much do I have to pay them?
This was Texas.
And I never looked at that scene again until I learned the lines on the plane, where going to wherever it was that we were shooting. You know, as an actor, if you can go to the place that nobody wants to go to and do it truthfully.
You mean Newark, New Jersey? No, I
touch and heal so many people. And by the way, I just want to mention that I'm doing this May tour.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to be at the New York Open Center May 17th. workshop there. I'm also going to be in Doylestown, Pennsylvania, and West Hartford, Connecticut, and Andover, Massachusetts, and I'm going to end up in Freeport, Maine. And I know you guys reach some of those places. Anybody wants to come see me or see me for a private session, just go to my website, iamdwallace.com, and find the New England tour, and all the information will be there for you.
Definitely a great way, a good spiritual way to spend a spring day, being healed and learning how to heal yourself from D. Wallace. And you say the website is iamdwallace.com?
Yep.
Is that because dwallace.com was taken?
No, it's because all my work is based on the I Am principle, that whatever you say you are, that's who you are.
Well,
that's how you create your life, and it's a powerful principle.
Well, I am Rabbi Saul Solomon, and it has been a powerful joy to be talking with the talented, the delightful, the spiritual, and the healed D. Wallace. It's been wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much. Continued success, both internally and externally, and on our screens all over the place. Thank you.
Thank you, darling. It's been a lot of fun.
Cool. Likewise. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.